ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. It's Tuesday, the 10th of March. I'm Andy Park, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, you are safe. Iranian women football players allowed to stay in Australia. And move over pickleball. Have you heard of squallyball? One outback town invents a new sport.
Well, squallyball is a variant of volleyball, but we play it on squash courts. So you do get to play the rebound off the walls and things like that. So it is actually a little bit more fast-paced and maybe a little bit more enjoyable.
Australia will send a military aircraft and dozens of personnel to the Middle East to assist in the defence of Gulf nations from attacks by Iran. Nations like Britain and France are ramping up their own military presence in the region, despite US President Donald Trump declaring his war against Iran is very complete and that fighting will finish pretty quickly. Here's Nick Grimm.
Israeli strikes hit Hezbollah-controlled suburbs in Lebanon's capital, Beirut. In retaliation, Hezbollah fired missiles deep into Israel, setting off air raid sirens. The exchange of fire, a similar story for countries around the Middle East. Now, Australia too has not been able to avoid being drawn into the widening conflict, with 85 Australian Defence Force personnel to be sent to the region, along with a Wedgetail surveillance aircraft to help defend against drone attacks. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese announcing too that medium-range air-to-air missiles will also be supplied to the United Arab Emirates.
The first priority of my government is, and always will be, to keep Australians safe. There are around 115,000 Australians in the Middle East, around 24,000 of those in the UAE. Helping Australians means also helping the UAE and other Gulf nations to defend themselves against what are unprovoked attacks.
The Australian contribution joins that of nations like Britain, already engaged in the work of targeting drone attacks, as British Defence Secretary John Healey told Parliament.
Typhoons successfully took out two drones, one over Jordan, the second heading to Bahrain.
While French President Emmanuel Macron has said France will deploy its aircraft carrier strike group and other naval vessels to the region. With the goal, he says, of escorting tankers and container ships through the Strait of Hormuz to supply global markets once the conflict has subsided. The European Union, meanwhile, says it will facilitate the use of Ukrainian expertise in anti-missile drone technology. And in the days ahead, it will sign a security and defence partnership with Australia, among others. Katja Kallas is the EU Foreign Policy Chief.
We have a long-standing strategic partnership with NATO. But we also have bilateral agreements, including 9 security and defence partnerships with countries in Europe, Asia and North America. And later this week, I will sign the 10th with Australia and subsequent ones with Iceland and Ghana in the coming days.
Iran insists it's prepared to wage war for months, but the US president has told his supporters the fighting will end soon.
What our military has done is amazing. They wiped out almost 20%, maybe 22, 23%, but the rest are going very quickly. And the missiles have been largely knocked out. The drones have been knocked down and we're hitting where they make the drones. We know them all. And we're knocking the hell out of that now where they manufacture the drones. A lot of work, a lot of brilliant work, but we're going to have a much safer world as soon as it's finished, and it's going to be finished pretty quickly.
It's a big mess right now, and there's no clear exit strategy for anybody.
Daniel Davis is a senior fellow with the US-based foreign policy think tank Defense Priorities. He's also a former lieutenant colonel in the US Army who deployed into combat zones. He believes there's no certainty when the conflict will end.
You know, right now it is. It's an impossible question because it's not going to be determined by military means. It's going to be determined by political will and who is going to bend first. Is it going to be the United States / Israel or is it going to be the Iranian side? And right now all of them are digging in deeper.
And he cautions against Donald Trump calling a premature end to the conflict.
You didn't get a removal of the regime. You just exchanged leaders. They're still in power. They still have a missile capability. They still have the support for their proxies. And nobody's gotten rid of their nuclear material, that 400 grams of 60% grade uranium. So if he walks away and just declares a victory, but none of those things are done, it's not going to play well at home. And the Israeli side, they don't want to stop until they get complete destruction of the Iranian regime. And so I'm not sure that they would quit even if Trump wants to walk away. So this drags on inconclusively. The president's supporters are going to start to go against him. And I know that that's very sensitive to him.
Daniel Davis from Defense Priorities, ending that report by Nick Grimm. Well, in light of Australia's military commitment to the conflict in the Middle East, there's growing concern over the nation's fuel supply. The federal government is urging Australians not to panic buy, claiming at least there's 32 days worth of stockpiled fuel. Meanwhile, though, around the country, farmers say the demand for diesel has tripled, and one economist is now warning rising oil prices could see inflation reach 5%. Here's Kathleen O'Connor.
The war in the Middle East is starting to hurt Australian businesses. Parvo Walker owns Walker's Seafood on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland and says 70 of his trawlers can't go out to sea because they can't get diesel.
There is no fuel for them. We only have three major fueling wharves in Mooloolaba and they're all empty.
Mr. Walker says with limited answers from suppliers, he doesn't know how long his business will last.
They're just saying they don't have any fuel, can't guarantee us fuel, don't know when they're getting fuel. Even the word if being banded around.
Producers nationwide are at the mercy of international supply chain pressures. Hamish McIntyre is from the National Farmers Federation.
We're hearing that the problem is based around moving the oil from the Middle East to Asian refineries and then on down to Australia. But the constraint seems to be that oil coming across to Asia and shipping costs have tripled.
It's putting the government under pressure. Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations Amanda Rishworth spoke on Channel 9 this morning.
Let's be really clear. There isn't a issue with supply when it comes to fuel. There has
yes,
been
there
obviously
is.
An
yes,
increase.
Yes, there is. We've just had farmers on. That's a complete fabrication. We've just had farmers on saying they cannot get fuel.
Let's
they
be cannot clear. Get there fuel. Has been a spike in demand. There has been a spike in demand. It doesn't mean
farmers
we do
in
not
the country
have
are saying this morning they cannot get
country.
Fuel.
Minister for Climate Change and Energy Chris Bowen says diesel and petrol supplies remain secure and urged people not to panic buy.
Later today, Minister Julie Collins and I, together with Minister Tim Ayres, will convene a roundtable of the National Farmers Federation, the oil companies, the peak groups, Trucking Australia, to ensure that the flow of communication between those groups is as strong as it could be.
Around $90 billion was wiped from the ASX yesterday as the war in the Middle East continues to shock markets around the world. Oil prices jumped above $100 a barrel. Chief economist at the National Bank of Australia, Sally Auld, warns the economic fallout could see inflation rise.
With oil prices having rallied quite a lot just in the last week, this will put further upward pressure on inflation. And so we do think it's quite possible, depending on where oil prices settle, that inflation could get somewhere around 5% by the middle of this year. So it does bring back, I guess, the spectre of cost of living increasing again and household budgets being put under pressure.
Meanwhile, overnight, energy ministers of the G7 countries, the United States, Canada, Japan, Britain, Italy, Germany and France, discussed whether to release strategic oil reserves. European Economic Commissioner Valdis Dombrovskis says they're closely monitoring market reactions to the developments in the Middle East.
We must be prepared for a more prolonged period of instability with potential disruptions in shipping, increases in energy prices, and implications for inflation.
On conditions to release the stockpiles, we broadly agreed that in a situation like this, where we are facing disruptions, we stand ready to release them.
US President Donald Trump also telling reporters his administration is considering lifting sanctions on some countries as part of efforts to stabilize the oil market.
I will not allow a terrorist regime to hold the world hostage and attempt to stop the globe's oil supply.
Donald Trump. Kathleen O'Connor there. The federal government says the entire Iranian women's soccer team has now been offered help to stay in Australia, but it's unclear if that help will be accepted. Five of the athletes were granted humanitarian visas in the early hours of this morning as pressure mounts from within Iran on the team and their families. Supporters here say they're worried about the safety of any members who decide to return home. Stephanie Smale reports.
From the football field to freedom, players from Iran's female soccer team now allowed to stay in Australia. Tony Burke is the immigration minister.
I signed off last night for their applications to go onto humanitarian visas.
There were growing fears the group would be targeted by the Iranian regime after being labelled traitors for not singing the national anthem ahead of their Asian Cup match against South Korea. But Tony Burke says five players escaped their Gold Coast hotel with Australian Federal Police officers and they're safe.
When I walked in, it was an expression of joy. One of the women mentioned that everybody she talks to, she just keeps saying thank you. So grateful.
It's prompted a turnaround from the US President Donald Trump, who had lashed out at the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, but then described him as on it when he received news of the humanitarian visas. Both President Trump and Australian leaders have acknowledged the women's difficult decision, given safety concerns about their families in Iran. The focus has now shifted to the fate of the rest of the team, the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese saying they'll have Australian support if they ask for it.
If you want our help, help is here.
Veteran sports reporter and podcaster Tracy Holmes points out it's a complex situation as the remaining team members consider their family's welfare. And she says pressure is mounting from Iranian authorities for the team to return.
There's been a couple of interviews that have been given to the State Press Association in Iran, basically just reinforcing that message that pressure will not be eased until the players and their family members return.
The AFP has been handed a formal referral to investigate whether that pressure amounts to exit trafficking. Dr. James Cocaine is the New South Wales Anti-Slavery Commissioner.
So there's a specific provision, which is colloquially known as exit trafficking, which is, says that it is a criminal offence in Australia for any person to coerce, threaten or deceive another person into exiting or proposed exit from Australia. And the reports that we've seen to date suggest that there may be such an offence currently on foot.
Dr. Cocaine says the women need the opportunity to tell their story.
What's really critical here is that a safe environment is created for these women and the support staff to be able to express themselves freely.
Save our girls! Save our girls!
Supporters have been camped outside the team's Gold Coast hotel around the clock and they're vowing to stay put. Human rights activist Hadi Karimi says Australian authorities should be doing more to help them.
Please take these girls out from this hotel. Albanese, you have the power to go to this hotel. Why don't you do it? Why you let these girls to be hostage?
Human rights activist there ending Stephanie Smale's report. Thanks for listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on ABC Listen. Subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search for The World Today. Rain has continued falling in Katherine in the Northern Territory as locals reckon with damage already caused by major flooding there. Hundreds of people remain displaced while others have endured days without power. As the clean-up in Katherine and surrounds begins, Bundaberg in Queensland is also bracing for imminent flooding this afternoon. Alexandra Humphreys reports.
After experiencing the worst flood in almost 30 years, Katherine and surrounding communities are now dealing with the aftermath. Hundreds of homes lost power and about 700 people were displaced to shelters around the town. Joanna Holden is the mayor of Katherine Town Council.
I know people are out there hurting and we've got quite a few elderly members of the community that have now been without power for several days. I know generators are running out of fuel.
Katherine is about 300 kilometres south of Darwin. Water levels peaked on Saturday, forcing roads, schools and even the local hospital to close. River levels have now begun to ease, but the rain has kept coming.
It is raining again today. It rained yesterday. People need to keep their eye out for road closures. I know the road that I go into town on has water over it, significant water over it this morning.
Joanna Holden points out that flooding in the top end also poses unique dangers.
We had a, I believe, a saltwater crocodile on our sports field on Sunday evening. Look, I think it just adds to, or to reinforce that messaging of, you know, going into floodwaters is so dangerous, and even more so when you have crocodiles. It's interesting how many displaced crocodiles or how many crocodiles there are. I've never seen it like this before.
So I've lost everything. So, yeah, that's painful.
Gary lives on Gwendolyn Drive, one of the area's hardest hit. He had a lucky escape with dog Gwen as the water in his home rose quickly.
And about 5 a.m, it started coming up. And by 6:30, I had water up to my knees. And then by 7, it was really raging through. And then I got SES guys to come and get me. They did a great job.
Brogan Hanrahan's cafe in Central Katherine has also been damaged.
Yeah, unfortunately, we actually had quite a bit of water come through there. Sorry, I'm a bit upset talking about it.
Despite that, Brogan has opened up her other business in Katherine East, offering locals what might be their first coffee in days.
I mean, it sounds like such a simple thing, but, you know, when you're in the midst of all of this, something like that is, yeah, it's really nice.
As the attention turns to cleaning up in Katherine, across the country in Queensland, Bundaberg residents are bracing for impact. A days-long deluge has residents in the Burnett River catchment on alert for major flooding. Bundaberg Regional Council Mayor Helen Blackburn says flooding is expected to peak at similar levels to 2010.
What that means is there's around 180 habitable properties that will be impacted. Now, those people that were impacted in 2010, they'll know who they are.
She's urging residents to act now.
Make sure that if you've got a plan, execute your plan. Make sure that you've got your medications and your pets are okay, and get yourself to somewhere that's safe.
The Paradise Dam upstream of Bundaberg is expected to spill for weeks.
Alexandra Humphreys there. Well, you'd never want to get between a Taylor Swift fan and tickets to her concerts, but Swifties may have had some revenge after the ticketing debacle, which saw long queues. Entertainment giant Live Nation, which owns Ticketmaster, has reached a settlement with the US Justice Department in an antitrust case targeting its dominance of the live events industry. But some in the music industry have said it's a backroom deal that amounts to nothing more than a slap on the wrist, and that perhaps nothing will change here in Australia. Here's Alison Chow.
A confusing and chaotic system.
Stressful thing I've ever gone through, but I got tickets.
It was during the pre-sale for the first leg of Taylor Swift's Eras Tour that the website Ticketmaster went into meltdown. The company said the site was overwhelmed by bot attacks, causing many customers to lose tickets after waiting for hours in an online queue. But the debacle put Ticketmaster's parent company, Live Nation Entertainment, under the microscope.
The Taylor Swift issue brought some things to a head, but it was more a burst of publicity.
Bernard Zuhl is a music writer and critic.
In the end, it was the accumulation of damage that was being wrought by companies like, but especially Live Nation, that led to action.
Live Nation was sued in 2024 by the US Department of Justice in 29 states, which initially sought to break up the concert giant, alleging it and its ticketing arm, Ticketmaster, had illegally monopolized the American live music industry. Now, a tentative settlement in the sweeping antitrust lawsuit has been reached. Under the deal, which is yet to be approved by a judge, Live Nation will allow businesses to use multiple vendors to sell tickets to fans. Live Nation will also divest up to 13 concert venues and pay around $400 million in damages to the US states that were involved in the case. But Bernard Zuhl says he's doubtful the settlement, if it goes through, will positively affect concertgoers.
For a start, consumers in Australia won't see any change. And consumers in the States, the company will still be fairly dominant.
He says problems with Live Nation's domination have been steadily growing, and this agreement will do little to curb them.
Dynamic pricing is not going to be affected by it. So, and that is a serious issue. What they have done is damage the touring, particularly festival touring section of the country by shutting down a number of big festivals.
Professor Jeannie Patterson from Melbourne Law School at the University of Melbourne agrees.
Now, what this action aimed to do was to break effectively that monopoly over venue and ticketing. The settlement is a sum of money that's been paid into a fund and an agreement to allow other ticketing companies to use the Live Nation Ticketmaster platform, but that doesn't really change the dominance of Live Nation in the industry.
But she says some parts of the settlement agreement, like caps on service fees, could help customers in the future.
Consumers in America should see some results out of that, but perhaps just as not as much as advocates would like.
In a statement, Live Nation says it's pleased to have settled its lawsuit and that it never relied on exclusivity to drive its ticketing business. But for Australian musicians like Kimberly Wheeler, the outcome is disappointing.
As an artist who is forever trying to break through that ceiling, it's really hard. We have a deficit of mid-tier bands, financially viable, and having these monopolies is imposing that upon the industry.
MEAA representative Kimberly Wheeler, Alison Shaw with that report. You know, Australians are pretty good at taking a sport, blending it with other sports, and coming up with something new. Take Aussie rules, for example. And legend has it that in outback New South Wales over the last few decades, a new sport has been played and refined in old disused squash courts. And just like pickleball's sensational rise in popularity, Cobar locals hope the same might happen to the sport they lovingly call squally ball. Here's Kim Goldsmith.
What do you get when you take a traditional sport like volleyball and transfer it to a very different setting? Like, for example, a squash court. The answer is squally ball. And if you've got no idea what that is, Colby Lawrence is here to help.
Well, squally ball is a variant of volleyball, but we play it on squash courts. So you do get to play the rebound off the walls and things like that. So it is actually a little bit more fast-paced and maybe a little bit more enjoyable.
A regular volleyball is used and you use your hands to hit the ball just like volleyball.
So it's the same as volleyball. There are a couple of variations though. So it is a point for point. You do not have to be serving to score the point. You cannot use your feet. That is the different one with this one. So you cannot use your feet. And it is first to 21 and cannot touch the net, the walls on the serve, and yet never allowed to touch the roof.
It's four a side and players take turns serving.
At the moment, we don't have a current comp running. We are just doing a weekly social. We're currently getting about 16 players turn up each week, so it's enough for four teams. We have two courts available, so that means we can have all four teams playing on at all times, and we just rotate with the teams and play each other.
Colby Lawrence, who's earned the nickname the King of Squally Ball, estimates it's been played in Cobar for 25 to 30 years and started as a way to make use of squash courts when they weren't being used. For sports fans looking from afar, it's quite the phenomenon. All-round sports fan Kieran Beefy Blake, who's travelled the world watching every sport he can, finds Squally Ball fascinating.
I love when new sports come about and sports have become linked to certain areas that sometimes don't travel, but when they do, they kind of explode. Now, with squally ball, or I have done my research, there is another very, very similar, it's probably the same sport, in parks in New South Wales as well as Cobar. They call it volley squash. So they do have their own competition in parks as well as Cobar.
Beefy Blake says sometimes new sports grow out of nowhere.
Well, I think you start with spaces that kind of become dead over time or underused. So take squash, which is massive in Australia in the 80s, and squash centres were popping up all over the place. They're now not being used as much. And you basically get a space where people want to involve more players and more people get involved. But I'm sure there's more and more of these kind of, for want of a better word, indigenous sports for that local area that that perhaps can grow.
Squallyball is played at the Cobar Youth and Community Centre. The teams are playing socially at the moment while they wait for the next season to get underway.
Kim Goldsmith and David Sparks with that report. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Andy Park.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Donald Trump wanted to personally choose the next leader of Iran. Of course, Iran rejected that, and it has elected the son of the former supreme leader to rule. Today, Barbara Slavin, Distinguished Fellow at the Stimson Centre, on what that means for the war. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on ABC Listen.